Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start in New England. All right, Tom Brady is a problem for the New England Patriots. You don't have to take my word for it. Bill Belichick said so yesterday in his daily press conference when asked an innocent question about backup quarterback Jared Stidham.
I mean, those guys are always ready to go, and it's an opportunity for them. You know, it's hard to practice three quarterbacks, but and there have been a couple examples where Tom hasn't been able to do a lot this year, so that's given Stid an opportunity to go with the first group and, you know, run our plays and run our offense, and that's been good for him.
It's been good for him, but it hasn't been good for the Patriots. The Belichick formula stands on a foundation of relentless and consistent preparation. 42-year-old quarterback Tom Brady can't prepare like he used to. That's a problem for him, and it's a problem for the Patriots, which makes Brady a problem for the Patriots. You don't have to take my word for it. The Boston Globe, the hometown paper for the Patriots, said so yesterday. Beat writer Ben Volen watched the tape of Brady's performance against the Bengals and wrote that Brady is playing like a shell of his former self. Volen said Brady's accuracy is a mess, that his timing is off, and that he locks in on wide receiver Julian Edelman. Bill Belichick and Ben Volen are not Patriot haters. Neither are former Patriots Matt Castle and Ted Johnson, guys who earlier this week sounded the alarm that there's something really wrong with New England's offense. It's Tom Brady. We can talk about what's not there. No Gronk. Antonio Brown vanished as quickly as he appeared. Josh Gordon smoked himself into oblivion again. New England's offensive line isn't as strong as it used to be. Would a younger, in his prime franchise quarterback mask some of New England's deficiencies? Brady would say no. Belichick, I think, wants to find out. Coaches believe if you can't prepare, you can't play at a high level. Players believe if you don't have the proper support, you can't play at a high level. There's truth on both sides. The AFC is being overrun by young quarterback stars, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and Deshaun Watson. Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Joe Flacco, and Ben Roethlisberger are being squeezed from the limelight. It's the way of the world, out with the old, in with the new. But Brady can legitimately say, look at the toys Jackson, Mahomes, and Watson get to play with. Jackson works behind the AFC's best offensive line, hands the football to Mark Ingram, and throws to a terrific group of tight ends in an offense specifically designed for Jackson's skill set. Mahomes, he has Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman. Watson, he has DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, Kenny Stills, and Laremy Tunsil. Brady's lack of weapons might be a bigger problem than Brady's lack of preparation, but you can't fix the weapons, not this year, which in my mind makes Brady the Patriots' biggest problem heading into the 2019 and heading into the postseason. There's no denying Tom Brady is New England's biggest problem in defending their Super Bowl title. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and former NFL offensive lineman Jeff Schwartz. Marcel, let's start with you.
Yeah.
Is Tom Brady responsible primarily for the Patriots' offensive struggle?
No, not at all, man. It's just amazing that the bar is so high for Tom Brady that we're losing our vision even looking up there. We can't see clearly what's really occurring at the top at the quarterback position. Let's talk about this six-time Super Bowl champion who right now is not playing his best football, but let's not forget he is the reigning Super Bowl champion, has won two of the last three Super Bowls. And talking about him in this moment, with three losses to AFC dominant teams, the Texans, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. So he's not losing to slouches even when he's going out there and having a losing effort. You talk about a guy who is playing at 42 years old, and we talk about load management in basketball. Let's talk about what you need to do just to get yourself ready to stay on the road in playing football at 42 at the quarterback position. And let's judge him. Let's judge him by his peers. Let's judge him by what we see out there. I went to the game and saw Russell Wilson as an MVP candidate not even throw a damn touchdown in Los Angeles. I saw I saw Deshaun Watson, 3 games this year, under 175 yards passing and 0 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers came to the state of California and averaged 130 yards per game against the Chargers and 49ers. I'm saying all that to say, it's amazing how hypercritical we are of Tom Brady when he has his miscues, but everyone else, oh, it's just a mulligan because they're young and the future's in front of them. All I'm looking at this team is they find a way, they figure it out, and Tom Brady's going to be responsible for them figuring it out.
I would say that Tom Brady's not the problem, but I think the system could be a problem because they haven't addressed the issues they have in this. The wide receivers cannot catch the football. Julian Edelman has 8 drops this year. He leads the NFL. There's no tight end. We know how long Tom Brady has relied on having a capable tight end. If you look around the NFL at all these offenses that are succeeding, they all have a tight end to roam the middle of the field. He does not have that guy anymore. There's no run game. The offensive line, they've tried to piece together. Isaiah Wynn at left tackle now is healthy. Their third string center, that obviously is not going to help any team do well. They designed an offense for many years now to be quick strike. They don't have those pieces at wide receiver to make it work. So if you want to blame Tom Brady for being that offense and them not surrounding him, sure. Would a mobile quarterback help? Of course, because they can't throw the football downfield. They can't run the football. A guy can run around and make plays. But Tom Brady himself, in my mind, he still sees all the pressures coming. He still sees all the blitzes. He still knows where to throw the ball. Guys aren't catching it. He's lost his confidence for sure. He only throws to Julian Edelman. There's guys open all the time. He won't throw to them. He doesn't trust them. Why would you trust someone who dropped 3 passes in a game? So I don't think it's Tom Brady, but I definitely think we can talk about if there was a mobile quarterback in that spot now playing with the weapons he had, the offense would probably make some plays late in the down. But that's not really what you want in the structure of your offense.
It's a no, and it's a no. It's not Tom Brady to blame for the struggles of the offense. And to take it a step further from what was just stated, this team is only 2 games off pace of what they ended up the regular season last year at 11-5. They're 2 games left. They're at 11-3. We're talking as though the glass is half empty when we really should be talking about that the glass is half full. Why? Even with all of the woes that this team is suffering, right? Lack of weapons, lack of production from Tom Brady. What you do have is a familiarity between a coach and a GOAT player. A player by which in the position that can dictate and control the outcomes of an entire situation of a team. I look at this team and I say to myself, they are going to continue to put their smoke screens up in the media. They are going to continue to allow people to think that they're 1 foot in the grave and almost dead and gone. And the mighty empire is done and washed up.
It's all an act. The 128 yards, it was all an act.
They're 11-3.
I think there are.
I don't think it's an act at all.
In a win.
It's 11-3.
It was a win also.
I think there are legit problems on the offense. I just don't know if Tom Brady is at fault in this offense. I mean, can you say, are they going to score 24 points and beat the Ravens or the Chiefs? I mean, we know those teams can score 24 points. That's my concern is that they have to have everything go right for them to score points now, where in the past it was not that way.
When has that ever stopped them from winning the Super Bowl? Everything has to go right for them because their formula, their mindset is, we'll capitalize on your mistakes.
But they're not doing that this year because they don't have the weapons on offense to make that happen. That's my concern. They don't have, like, in previous years, last year, AFC Championship game, right? Struggling a little bit on offense, throw the ball to Gronk. Super Bowl, throw the ball to Gronk. Who is throw the ball to now? Like, that's my concern with the offense. They don't have.
No, he leads the league in drop passes.
That's all right.
He's going to double now, too.
I'm going to give you a good analogy. I'll give you a good example of what we're dealing with right now. I'm a big NASCAR fan. I'm a big Dale Earnhardt Jr. fan.
Look at that fox coming out of you.
He used to come hang out at the park sometimes when I played. But when he has new tread on his tires, he's virtually unbeatable, right? At some point during the race, his treads wear down. He needs to probably come in to take a pit stop, get his tires changed up so that he could get that torque back going. But yet and still, because he's as good as he is and he's as skilled a driver as he is able to continue more laps than what another driver would be able to do that has to stop in that pit to get his tires changed to get better tread. Tom Brady can stay on the track. The tread may be low. He may not have the amount of talent that people think that he needs to have to be able to get around the track and win the race, but he continues to prove to us that he can get that car around the track without a pit stop to win the race.
You can't go. Every car has to get to the pit stop at some point.
Yeah.
Refuel, change tires, blah, blah. There's nothing in there. Gronk's not walking through that door. They're not putting AB on the car. They're not putting Josh Gordon on the car. And Ben Volen, he's no Tom Brady critic. He's no Patriot hater. He's looking at the tape and like, hey, man, there are these other problems, but Tom Brady's problems, accuracy, locking in on Edelman, some of these, that's on Tom Brady. And then when I read it, any coach said, Tom hasn't been able to do a lot this year. And he's just talking about a couple of examples. Mm-hmm. He's not saying the whole year. Mm-hmm. But when you don't have weapons you're familiar with and you're not able to prepare with them like you used to be able to because you're 42 and you just can't go the way you used to go Monday through Friday, that's a problem.
I do agree that it presents its issues. It presents its challenges. But when you're talking about someone who is as knowledgeable and as wise as Tom Brady is and Belichick, we are focusing in on Tom Brady and what Tom Brady may or may not be able to do. We are focusing in on a lack of weapons on the offensive side of the ball, what may lead to this, that, and the other. When in reality, we should be focusing in on the total whole of what this team represents, what they're able to do on special teams, what they're able to do on defense. And once you put all of those parts together, then you can take the total sum of what they represent and you can come up with your real conclusion.
And that total sum will give you perspective. And here's proper perspective on Tom Brady. Let's just do apples to apples comparisons. Last year in December, I told you about the Buffalo game. That was worse than the game we saw against Cincinnati. Articles were written, oh, the Patriots woes on offense. They win a Super Bowl. Let's talk about this year for perspective. We're talking about the 9th ranked pass offense in struggle. 8th ranked scoring offense in struggle. We're talking about the Pro Football Focus rankings that just came out today, updated. They sent it to me first. And we got Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, and Jimmy G all lower than the Tom Brady at 42 years old. My point is, the most important question that hasn't been answered yet is, can you count on Tom Brady when it matters most? Belichick knows the answer. He can say whatever he wants to in December. He knows in January he can count on Tom Brady. No matter what the numbers suggest, he's going to make critical plays at critical times to help his team.
Every week this season, we virtually come on and talk, man, Tom Brady's not playing well.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, in the 11 victories or 10 victories or how many ever they got, we've 11. Been talking about, yeah. Hey, he hasn't looked the same. And so, LeVar, I hear your deal, and I'm like, you're a guy that ignores all the symptoms. There's going to be a big lump on your back that's the size of a basketball. Oh, man, maybe I should go see a doctor. Because you've ignored all the symptoms. There are symptoms here with the Patriots and Tom Brady that shouldn't be ignored and can't be covered up by an 11-3 record. Everybody can see it. Matt Castle, Ted Johnson, Ben Volen, Bill Belichick.
But some of those symptoms, I think, is out of hysteria. Like, you went to the doctor and you saw the lump and you start talking about stuff that didn't even matter, didn't even exist. Like, this whole Gronkowski last year, caught 47 passes, looked good in a couple of the games at the end. But the point is, up to this point, apples to apples, there was no Gronkowski in the passing game like before. Let's talk about A.B. and Josh Gordon. What the hell? Tom Brady never could count on those guys. He got A.B. for one game and Josh Gordon was in and out the lineup forever. So when we use those guys as issues for this passing game or this offense, I'm like, they weren't even there in their Super Bowl run last year. So why are we making that comparison?
Well, they were when it counted, though, right? That's kind of my
Gronk
point.
Gronk was looking, for right, two of the have, three games.
And look, and remember this. They won their playoff games by running the football.
Right.
They can't do that right now. They cannot run the football the way they did last year. They don't have their fullback. They don't have their offensive line. They went into Kansas City and ran it down their throats in that game and threw the Gronk at the end of the game. They don't have that option right now. And so I think I'm never counting the Patriots out. I'll bet on them every game in the playoffs until they're out of the playoffs. Mm. But I think there's legitimate concern that they have to have a perfect game on offense to make it work because their defense is going to be good, their special teams. But if they make a couple of mistakes on offense, they cannot afford
to. If there's one team out there that you said they could play a perfect game, or at least mistake-free when it matters most, wouldn't it be the Patriots?
Okay, N'Keal Harry doesn't score on that play against the Chiefs, right? First and goal from the three. Mm-hmm. How many times in the previous years would they have scored on that drive a touchdown?
I don't know.
Instead, they went backwards and kicked the field goal.
Yeah, like,
that's the difference between
11 and 3. You cannot accidentally get to 11 wins in this
league. Beat it up.
I'm going to tell you what one of the issues we have here is that these guys have never been the franchise player on a nationally ranked team like I have.
I was
what?
Like Tom Brady.
I was on
You've
the
never
cover,
been able to
I was
carry
on the cover of Sports Illustrated,
team.
Number one ranked football like, team.
I understand. Like, national,
I'm the highest paid defensive
nationally ranked team, though, oh, being a franchise
on,
player.
I was all, on the
I did that in high school. And
oh. Al Bundy over here. What you got, Al? What you got?
I'm just saying, Brady can't do it anymore. He can't. He's a franchise player that's supposed, when you're that franchise guy, you're supposed to cover up mistakes. And he can't do it anymore. And that's all Ben Volen and guys are talking about. Mm. And Brady can say on his, hey, man, y'all not paying me like I'm the franchise guy. I took less so we could have more,
hey,
and
Whit,
you didn't give me more.
Let me out, Whit.
I don't.
Let me out, Whit. I ain't going on that ride with you, Whit.
11 wins.
Let me out.
Hey guys, this is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save enough money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for the future or visit pacificlife.com.
Let's move to a big story in the Cowboys. We're gearing up for a huge matchup with the Eagles in Philadelphia Sunday on Fox, which could very well decide the NFC East winner. But according to Jason Garrett, Dak Prescott won't be at full strength for the divisional showdown after suffering an injured throwing shoulder against the Rams. According to ESPN's Ed Werder, Zeke Elliott says he's had the same injury and can't imagine throwing with it. All right, the question here is, can the Cowboys beat the Eagles with a banged up Dak Prescott?
Yeah. Yeah, and it might just fall into their lap, the fact that Dak is banged up. And let's talk about Dak last week, season low in attempts, season low in yards, and maybe their best performance. And you're like, oh, that was just an anomaly. No, how about his second season low was against the Eagles when they beat them 37-10. So the new formula in Dallas is less Dak, more Zeke, and that's how our offense runs. This plays right into their hands. Ezekiel Elliott, 5-0 against the Eagles, 163 scrimmage yards on average against the Eagles. So you can say what you want about Dak. This might be a game for him to go out there, rest up in terms of attempts, but actually get the job done.
Oh, I agree. I think this is perfect for the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Dallas Cowboys rediscovered their formula. Look, the first part of the year, we talk about Dak and them throwing and him having to prove that he's worth a big contract. Now it's winning time. And I think winning time for the Cowboys has always been about Ezekiel Elliott setting the pace, them throwing the ball down the field to Amari Cooper, then the defense playing complimentary defense. Mm-hmm. I think the Philadelphia Eagles are the perfect matchup for them. I think they beat them, and I don't think this is going to be close.
They couldn't win with Dak, so I don't know why they went without Dak. I mean, that seems to be a big problem that they have where their offense looks good, but they never actually end up winning a lot of these games. And you mentioned the running game. Yeah, when you're ahead, you're able to run the ball more. That's why you have more attempts and more carries. If you get behind 7-0, you get behind 10-0, Dak's got to throw the football. You're on the road. It's not going to be as simple as just, let's hope we run the football. Remember, the Eagles might have a terrible secondary, but their D-line is still good. They can still stop the run very well. And so I think that you need to have a healthy as possible Dak Prescott to push the ball downfield against this poor Eagles secondary.
Can they beat the Eagles? Yes. Will they beat the Eagles? No. I think that Dak's shoulder will be an issue and will keep Philadelphia in the game. And then so when it becomes a fourth quarter game, and particularly in the last 4 to 5 minutes, who do I trust more, Dak or Carson Wentz? Carson Wentz this year has made some magic late in games and has been a clutch performer down the stretch. I think with Dak limited, with the Eagles being able to load the box and focus on slowing Ezekiel Elliott, I think this is going to be a fourth quarter game. And then I'm going to go Carson Wentz over Dak in that situation.
Made some magic or just cleaned up his own mess against trash teams?
I mean,
Giants and Redskins. You've been watching this? That's not magic. Limping and going to overtime against.
Got no weapons.
That's going to be the point. They're also banged up. Jordan Howard last week inactive. Aguilar, Lane Johnson, Alshon Jeffrey gone for the season. Two defensive ends gone. Like,
He doesn't even have a lot to work with on both sides of the ball, this team, as a collective. And they got beat by 27 with Dak there. A limited Dak, more Zeke, who is good against this team. I think that's the formula.
Yeah, I mean, like, without even talking about offensively, the Eagles don't have the ability to score points. They have one explosive player. That's Miles Sanders. Outside of that, they don't have anyone. And so they're playing with Greg Ward and three tight ends. They're not going to beat the Cowboys secondary. So I don't know if the Eagles can score enough points to make Dak Prescott have to be a factor. I think the magic number for the Cowboys is 21. They scored 21 points. They beat the Eagles.
It's a wrap.
I think they're going to struggle to get there. I see this as a 24-21 type game. It'll be a struggle for, I think, for both offenses. Again, when it's predetermined, it's going to be Zeke. I think the Eagles with their front seven have a shot at slowing that down. And then you comes, can you create some turnovers? Can you force Zeke to give up the ball? Amari Cooper maybe to give up a ball? How's Dak's ball security going to be with this injured shoulder? I think the Eagles get a few turnovers, a turnover or two that swing the game and give them a chance to win this game in the fourth quarter. And look, I don't think much of the Eagles. You know, I don't think much of the Cowboys either. Or Dak, we didn't even get into, you know, Dak has lost a lot of money this year, Bucky.
No. Like, he's sitting at 35, 36.
We're sitting there.
Squatting.
Squatting
on it.
Less Dak, more Zeke, but we're going to pay more Dak more. Okay. LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson is well on his way to an MVP season, but could actually be headed for something even more special. Hall of Famer Kurt Warner says that if Lamar gets to 35 or 40 passing touchdowns, he'd be in the conversation for the best season ever by a quarterback, and Warner definitely has a point. Lamar's season stacks up very well among some of the top MVP seasons ever by some huge names, and of course, he's also rushed for over 1,000 yards as well. All right, we brought up the end, but because 3 weeks ago, we brought up this topic and said Lamar was on track. I think everybody knows where we stand on this.
Right.
Is Lamar Jackson having the greatest season we've ever seen from a quarterback?
I would have to say yes, man. I'm serious. I'm talking about the simple math of combining the two forces at that position that we basically have never seen before. Let's just respect it. His ability to extend the play, move the chains with his feet, and his ability to dart you with his arm. The combined forces of that is what we're seeing right now. He's going to be the unanimous MVP. We know that. He has Pro Bowl running back numbers, and he's playing quarterback at the highest level. So there's no compromise. You want to go back to what? Mike Vick? There was a compromise in this passing game. You want to go back to Randall Cunningham? There was a compromise in the passing game. You want to go back to Steve Young? There was a compromise in the mentality to fully embrace his skill set. So this is the first time the skill set, hey, I'm open-minded, I can do whatever I want, the organizational support, and I actually have profound ability in both categories. To me, it's the best I've seen it.
It's the greatest season I've ever seen. Like, this is must-see TV whenever he is on. Dynamic, explosive, efficient. Whatever you want to see Lamar Jackson do, he has been able to do it. He's done it in space. Open up the seasons, 5 touchdown passes. We've seen him run around. We saw the spin move versus the Cincinnati Bengals. Mm. We've seen countless highlights. And you talk about him redefining the position. Lamar Jackson got kids all over the country running around talking about, oh, I'm Lamar. To me, what he has been able to do is nothing short of spectacular. It has to be the best season that we've seen because we've never seen anybody do it in a confined fashion like he's been able to do it.
I think it sounds awesome what you guys are saying. And while I will start, listen.
You think? We do too.
Yeah,
we
agree. I do. But I don't agree with you guys. And
you still don't agree. You said this 3 weeks ago.
I'm saying no for the same reasons why I said it before. And today I say no. Is it possible? Yes. This is purely subjective. We're basing what we believe off of weighted feelings of what matters most. What matters most to me and how it applies to football is winning. Mm. And so when I look at greatest seasons ever as a quarterback, The two seasons I would look at is the 2017 season with Tom Brady and 2007. And the season with Bob Greasy when was that 78, 60,
70, what is that? We really gonna do that?
Dolphins. Yes.
We're really doing that?
Yes, I am. And here's why. Mm. The only reason why Bob Greasy would not be in the conversation of greatest season for a quarterback ever is only because
he wasn't.
Played five games.
He missed five games.
But one that came closest to having an unblemished mark on their record at 18-1, losing in the Super Bowl, was one Tom Brady. He threw 50 touchdowns. The variables that take place to be able to have a game where you could redefine what the NFL represents by going undefeated in modern day football outweighs any type of single season performance that any quarterback, not Mike Vick, not Lamar Jackson. If Lamar wins the Super Bowl, then we can have the conversation. He would be at what you would say, 17-2 he would be at if they win the Super Bowl. I can have the conversation.
But Brady didn't win the Super Bowl that year.
He did not, but he was 18-1. He lost the last game, but he was one game. I mean, the Super Bowl, I'm not going to say the Super Bowl defines his greatness in that season.
You just said if Lamar wins it,
then that's Lamar and I think that's the differentiator because Lamar still has one more loss than what Tom Brady did if he wins that Super
Bowl. How many rush yards did Tom Brady have in those
seasons? Don't matter.
I get what you're saying. Because, again, the goal, regardless, is to win. Everything you're doing at the quarterback is about winning. I get what you're saying. And it's a better argument than you made last time, and it's legitimate.
You getting there?
It's legitimate. But to me, 1994 Steve Young completed the ball at 70% when the next closest guy was at like at 64%. Mm. It was mind-blowing. And it was like, oh, my God, how can this guy
do?
And that's what Lamar Jackson is doing to us every week. It's mind-blowing. It's like, this dude's really going to go through this NFL marathon running the ball like a running back for more than 1,000 yards, and he's going to continue. He's going to lead the league in passing touchdowns. There's not one. Ozzie Newsome did not believe on draft day that Lamar Jackson could lead the NFL in passing touchdowns. He did not believe. He thought it could be great, but no one thought he's going to lead the league. And so for him to do that while running for 1,100, 1,200 yards, it's mind-blowing. I agree. I want to see him run through the finish line. And then the cherry on top to me, because, again, when we talk about greatest season, all we're really talking about is regular season to me. Mm-hmm. But it would be if he ran through the finish line and won the Super Bowl, I think it would be
indisputable. I think it's a mic drop.
For me,
if you're going to compare it to 94 Steve Young season, it's already a mic drop because Steve Young had 42 combined touchdowns that year. Lamar already has 40 with two games to go. Their quarterback rating is exactly the same right now. But Steve Young had 293 rush yards in 16 games, and Lamar's already over 1,100. It's just adding up both. And we always mentally compromise one for the other at this position. I told you, Steve Young had to compromise. I remember reading articles about the climate of we're not fully embracing the running quarterback. And then now the franchise is turned over to you. You need to protect yourself. So he goes out there and protects himself to the tune of 293 yards. And Lamar says, take the lid off of this. Take the governor off of this car and let's ride. And that's why if you combine what he's doing passing-wise and rushing, I don't see anybody ever.
I think that's the thing. He has almost 300 total yards that he's accounted for. We're so used to the quarterback being a passer only. The fact that he's a dual threat, doing what he's doing while winning games, I think that puts him in that conversation.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington's back. We're joined now by Fox Sports NBA analyst Rick Bucher. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to high school basketball. Ooh. Where Bronny James had a big weekend, making a late-game steal and go-ahead layup to give Sierra Kane the win over his dad's old high school, St. Vincent St. Mary's. LeBron was so pumped, the refs had to hold him off the court, which wasn't the first time LeBron got pumped courtside at his son's games. Wanted to ask you guys, do you like how LeBron is handling Bronny's career?
I don't. I think it's too public. I think it's too much. I think it's too much of LeBron's shadow. I think that he's a freshman in high school, and I don't think he's a national player.
that would be getting this kind of attention unless he was LeBron's son. I don't think his level of play warrants this level of attention. And I'm not, I just don't like it. It's way too big of a shadow to be casting over his son. And I think eventually it's going to, if his son's a mid-major type player or a low power five type player, I think there's going to be backlash from all the attention that's, you know, all the stories that are being written about a high school freshman who's a good player, but I just don't know if he's a national player.
One, just a suggestion that at high school in your freshman year, you already have a career. I mean, that's letting you know. I've never, ever put myself in that mindset. I have a career already, so that's amazing. Head start already to Bronny Jr. But I like how LeBron is handling this. I tell you that no parent parents perfectly. You never hit bullseye. So the question is, which side are you going to err on? Are you going to err on the side of overcorrecting like LeBron because he didn't have his father in the house and doing too much? Or are you going to be the one that does not enough? And your son sits there and say, Dad, with your platform, with your level of exposure, you could have done more to help me. To the tune of, why was this game even on television? Why were we watching this game? Because LeBron signed off on his son's high school playing against his alma mater, putting this all together. So a man who missed his son's first 7 games in the cold tub, taking care of his day job, takes the private jet on the 8th game, sits center court and gets a little too excited, I can't criticize that because it beats the alternative.
First of all, can we blame Darnell for the criticism we're going to get for criticizing someone else's parenting because he asked the question?
Put it over
I mean, we know what we got coming for us, right? You know, on the list of egregious sins, parenting sins, this probably isn't that high on the list.
Yeah.
The issue that I have with it is that what LeBron is saying and what he's doing, there's a massive contradiction. And to your point, like, he's a freshman, and we're talking about LeBron handling his career. Not having a career, not just having a career, but his dad handling it.
Yeah.
Supposedly, he's going to Sierra Canyon because there are other celebrities there, and there are other celebrities' kids there, and they want some sense of normalcy. This is what I get from ESPN Brian Windhorst's story on why he's there. If I'm not mistaken, Dwayne Wade's son Zaire is on this team, right?
Now, that's the one layer I don't think a lot of people know, but I'll get to that.
And Scottie Pippen's son went there before he went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing any video of them sitting courtside, jumping onto the court, excited over their son's performances. Every other father that I've seen who's a celebrity who goes to their games, they're up in the stands. They're wearing their hat low. They're trying to be as inconspicuous as possible. Bronny's not allowed to do interviews, but LeBron's doing all kinds of interviews about Bronny. Bronny's not allowed to be in front of the cameras, except for the uninterrupted cameras by LeBron that's doing a documentary that's following him everywhere. So do you want your son to have a sense of normalcy in high school, unlike what you experienced, or Are you trying to put him on the biggest platform possible to make sure that he gets to the NBA so you can play together? It's just a contradiction one more time that confuses me. I'm not going to judge how he's raising Bronny. He can do it however he wants. But what he's doing and what he's saying are two different things.
I'm going to say no just from a simple approach and standpoint as a father myself. I have a son that has gifted potential within the sport of football. His career is his career. His name is LeVar. He's the second. He has to put in the work. He's got to put in the grind with no shine work. He has to believe in what his abilities are, his potential is. Nothing is given. Everything is earned. I look at this situation and the way it's being played out, and I love the enthusiasm of LeBron and his wife. They're proud of their son. They're proud of his accomplishments. But where I start to see this could be a problem for Bronny moving forward is I believe it provides a false sense of accomplishment. And for the simple fact that if he's good enough, if he's really as good as he's being put out to be, and I've seen film of him and the kid, Mikey Williams, these guys are really talented basketball players. Let that light, let that exposure be helped somewhat by your dad's popularity, but not driven by your pop's popularity. And that's where you say, Bronny's going to have a very difficult time differentiating between entitled and earning. He's going to have to earn it when it becomes real with the competition, which his competition is real now. But entitled is not going to win you a game. And I think that that's where we run kind of a dangerous line of which one is better than the other.
So my point of view is driven by, I just don't think spotlight helps anyone. I don't think it's healthy for anyone. And again, that's a personality quirk in me. I don't, despite being on TV, people, if you ever see me out in public or whatever, I'm generally not the life of the party. And I'm not looking to be the life of the party. I'm looking to get home and be in bed by 9:30. I just don't want any attention. So I'm just not, I just don't think celebrity, and that's what LeBron has made, Bronny and getting him on Instagram immediately, orchestrating this game and just orchestrating things for him to become a bigger and bigger celebrity. It's Kardashian-like, and, you know, that's where, and again, Kenyon Martin's son played at this high school as well, and Kenyon used to come on this show, and if you didn't ask Kenyon about his son, you never heard about him. Yeah. I can remember the first time someone asked him, and then I got interested, and every time he'd come on, I'd ask, how's he doing, blah, blah, blah. And so, Rick, I love your point in terms, there's a lot of celebrities' sons that have played here or whatever, and they're not all up in the video. Let the kid create his own video.
It's not LeVar Ball, but it's LeVar Ball-ish.
It's a different version of it.
I'm going to create a spotlight, and then I'm going to shine it on my kid. And to your point, like, we all want to develop out of the spotlight. Like, don't put me on the big stage where my mistakes on and my growth is under the microscope. Allow me to develop along the way, and that's not what's happening for Bronny. And again, I'll go back to this. Like, look, if you're LeBron James' son, the idea of life being normal is kind of far-fetched anyway.
Right.
I have to ask, you named your son after you.
I did not.
You did not.
My wife did that.
Okay.
And I did not want to name him after me for this very conversation. I wanted him to earn it on his own. But I will say, now that he has been named, I think it's pretty cool seeing a little me, or at least in his version of it, walking around. And now he's growing and his muscles are growing. But again, I look at it from the standpoint of if we were playing, if I were as big a star as a LeBron James, which he's one of the only few guys you can compare to the greatest of all time when we talk about greats of all time, I would just be very cognizant of putting that type of spotlight on my child, especially if, you know, he's LeVar. So the minute he goes out there on the field, my son wants to wear 11. But it's still his career. It's still his duty to do it. And that's why I think where you got to let him go out there and get it.
Well, I named my son Junior, and I did it because I wanted him to actually be a part of the continuum of success. I push back on you guys because we know in this society, success begets success. We know that generational wealth is not just handing money over to the next generation. It's human capital, opportunities, platforms. From Stephen Jones on down, people just put in positions to grow. But guess what? They were put in a high position that maybe they didn't even earn in with their merits just yet. The reason why people always say, I want you to just grind with no shine and earn it on your own and do it yourself, in part is because we didn't have it
ourselves. We're talking from a crippled place where we didn't have a platform to elevate whatever we were doing. But imagine if you did. That doesn't change your internals. That doesn't change your motivation. What we think does is that if you starve someone in circumstances on the outside, they're going to be so hungry to go get it, they're going to do it. But the numbers suggest that people from starved situations continue to starve. And people from affluent situations become even more affluent. So if you look at this situation, all I'm saying is, when we know that the male brain is not fully developed to the age of 25, I'm talking from my perspective as a helicopter dad who is going to make sure my son not only is put in the best positions, but I'm going to be the co-pilot. And I'm going to allow him to be blessed by his daddy's earnings and his last name.
But you have to find the balance in that. And knowing
that. Is that out of balance? Screaming for your son going to a game?
Screaming for your son going to a game? No, it's not out of balance.
Right. Setting up a game between your high school and the high school the kid plays, yeah, I think that's too much.
But he came off the bench. So it's not like LeBron is pulling strings. LeBron,
named multiple MVPs for this game.
Yeah.
Is the story. It's like he was first team all game.
You know one thing that gets lost now? This could be conjecture. That's funny. Hey, all right, let me give you one. You gave me one day. I was like, oh, come on, LeBron. But here's one for LeBron. Now, this is the rumor mill, but, I went to school in Santa Monica at St. Monica, which is across from Crossroads, where Bronny Jr. was. And why did Bronny Jr. go from from Crossroads to Sierra Canyon? In part because Dwayne Wade was trying to get his son in the Crossroads, and that didn't go as planned. Mm. So, therefore, he has to go somewhere else. Well, let's team up. LeBron is trying to create a shared experience of people who are of that platform.
He always
right.
has.
It's not like he's trying to do this selfishly, is my point.
But my only issue is I don't think spotlight is good for young people. And look, take Michael Jordan's sons. They had basketball careers of some level. I think one of them played Division I or whatever.
Right.
But Michael Jordan, biggest stars we've ever seen. His sons could make mistakes without being major headlines. If Bronny James does what I did at 15 and other kids do that make the mistakes that we make at 15.
Hit him. He's already had some situations on social media.
It's just the headlines that are going to come because he's a big star. Even though he really isn't a big star, his dad is. And that's why I'm just saying, take some of the spotlight away and just let this kid blossom on his own. Starving's not even in the equation for Bronny James.
No.
He's not going to be. It's just, but do we need to make him a star right now where he's a front page headline on ESPN? I think that's a
mistake. Let me button this up by saying we need to have a conversation one day about how good athletes make great athletes. And great athletes make good athletes. And if you understand that, Barry Bonds Sr. to Barry Bonds Jr. is a lot different than Michael Jordan to whoever your son's going to be. So in this situation, it is already set up where Bronny Jr. won't be LeBron. But that's not the point. Try to help him and elevate and enhance whatever the hell he's going to be, even if he falls short like the rest of the world.
Joined again by Bucky Brooks and Jeff Schwartz. Time now for the most fearless discussion of the day. All right, the Carolina Panthers and their fan bases are signaling they're going to make the same mistake men and women have been making since Cupid fired his first arrow. They're going to go back to their old lover, Cam Newton, the quarterback who first curled their toes. Panthers fans started a GoFundMe to raise money to buy a billboard that will say, "Keep Cam Newton in Carolina." Panthers safety Trey Boston told The Athletic that Cam is missed in the Carolina locker room. "I know an elite quarterback when I see one, and he's one of them. It's all about building it around him. When he's been his best, we've had a healthy O-line, and we had healthy players around him, and that's it." Yeah, we've all been there or seen this movie before. Girl, what you doing? Think about you every Wednesday. Remember, we met on a Wednesday at Niecy's Happy Hour. Mm-hmm. Carolina's rebound relationship with Kyle Allen is over. Things were great for a month. Allen couldn't lose. He was on his best behavior. He valued each moment and each possession. Then he got comfortable in the relationship. Next thing you know, he started leaving little items just laying around the locker room. And then Carolina went to San Francisco. Allen left his dirty underwear all over the field and refused to pick them up. It was unseemly. 3 interceptions and no touchdowns. Ron Rivera had a long talk with him. Allen said it would never happen again. Things were cool for the next 2 weeks, And Carolina was like, oh, this just might work. Mm. And then the Falcons came to town, and Kyle Allen acted a fool and made a fool out of the Panthers. Four interceptions and no touchdowns. The relationship was on life support from that moment. Carolina lost to Atlanta 29-3. All that was left to wonder is whether the Panthers would go back to Cam. It's in our nature to return to what's familiar. There's less risk. It's what's easy. But is it in our best interest? Has Cam really fixed the issues that soured the relationship? Is it as simple as fixing Cam's foot? I'm not so sure. Carolina might be best served hopping on NFL Tinder, eHarmony, Match, or Sugar Baby site and finding its next young hot quarterback.
Sugar Baby.
Yeah, Sugar Baby sites. All right.
Hey,
Marcellus.
That sounds good. That sounds tempting.
Sugar Baby. Yeah. Should the Panthers kiss and make up with Cam?
Yeah, obviously. But first, I don't even think they broke up. I think it was a sabbatical, a break. Like, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I need to get my mind right.
Separation.
Separation. And let's be real about these separation, long-distance relationships. You're a little lonely, right? So you go on a date to Kyle. Come here, Kyle. Come on, man. Let's see what's up. And Kyle had it rolling, but then he couldn't Wally Pip Cam. He couldn't do it. He couldn't Colin Kaepernick Alex Smith. And that's what the opportunity was. If we find Kaepernick a backup who takes over for our franchise quarterback, well, Cam, it doesn't matter what you feel. You got to go. But that's not this situation. So now you look at this situation for what it is. Cam Newton, $19 million next year. Cam Newton, a franchise quarterback. Even in trade, he's going to command top dollar in value. So that means he has value within your organization. I think right now the organization is saying, let's make sure we know all things when it comes to Cam Newton going forward before we make any decision. And they don't even have a new head coach yet. So why are we putting the cart in front of the horse talking about what's going to happen with Cam when the coach hasn't even got a vote yet?
Look, man, this was always, always a situation that was going to have to come back to Cam. A lot of the conversation about Cam had to go for the $19 million, let's just think about what $19 million means in the quarterback landscape right now. Jared Goff is at $34 million annually. Are we saying that Jared Goff is almost two times better than Cam Newton? No. So the Carolina Panthers are now looking at Cam Newton saying, okay, we got another year with a quarterback. So even if he's not at the best, it's a sound investment. We can draft one. We can go and get another. I just thought it was too much too soon to say that they were going to move on from him. Look, he's certainly been humbled by the entire experience. I think he understands he has to come back and play better. But I think it's a situation where Carolina always was going to continue their relationship with Cam.
Yeah.
I think the relationship is done. I'll give you a couple reasons why. They have a new owner, right, second year. And we know that new owners like to kind of have their people in place, right? He let Ron Rivera go. There's going to be other changes. I think they're redoing their whole roster. Veterans, you're gone, including Cam Newton. They'll try to get some sort of compensation back for him. It feels like a good breaking point right now with Cam and to restart your franchise with another quarterback. You mentioned the coach. You know, if you're tethering a new coach to Cam Newton and Cam gets hurt early next season, now you've wasted another year with a brand new coach. Cam is always going to be hanging over this franchise. He's done wonderful things for the franchise. Got him a Super Bowl, beloved in Charlotte. He does great things in the community. He did something yesterday, but it's time to break up with him. It's a perfect spot. You have a new coach. You're going to go in a different direction. They're going to get rid of everyone, I think. They're going to get rid of all the veterans. They're starting over. New quarterback, new coach. Makes sense.
No, it does not, because the new head coach may be Greg Roman. And if Greg Roman comes in there, he might want to say, I got a Lamar Jackson, but so damn
you
self.
You want 31-year-old Cam who's been beat up running 150 times a season?
Yep. Let's take this misnomer that you get hurt when you run the ball more than you get hurt in the pocket. We have seen enough pocket passers go down this year. Even Lamar Jackson got hurt because he was in the pocket. So Cam Newton at 31, fully healthy, I want to see him go out there and batter ram his way
to
success.
Well, I don't think he will be as effective as a runner as what we've seen from Cam in the past at 31.
I agree with that.
And then there are other the things we're sleeping on about Lamar Jackson and his running is he's so good at it and still able to think and still able to play the pocket game when necessary.
Yeah.
When you're a guy that's out running 150, 200 times a year and then you also have to think as a quarterback in the pocket. That's so hard. And to think that just because you have the gift to run, that you could also have the gift when you're tired, when they've rung your bell and you're seeing stars, you can still think at the quarterback position and control your team. That's the special gifts of Lamar Jackson that I'm not sure Cam has, particularly at 31. And then the other thing I think, because Bucky, I think what you described is like a one-year situation, unless
we're not talking about extend the deal.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so that one-year deal, what you're talking about, to stick with my analogy in the opening, is like an open relationship. And I don't think Cam can handle that. I don't think if they go draft a quarterback, in the, which they need to do, they need to draft a quarterback, I don't think Cam is a guy that's built for, oh, damn, they done moved my mistress into the house? I don't think he can handle that.
Donald Sterling over here?
So here's the thing. I think it sounds great to move on from Cam, like in theory. Yeah. But in reality, it's hard to find a quarterback. Mm. We're seeing how hard it is to find young quarterbacks that can do it. In this class alone, we're talking about Tua, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert. And then after that, there's a significant fall off. So if I'm the Carolina Panthers, and what they should be doing, if the ownership is talking to the personnel staff, who is out there and available? Who can we get that will be better than what we know in Cam Newton? And if you can't get an upgrade, you have to continue to date Cam while you're hoping and wishing for something else to come. Because even in the free agent market, are we going to trade Cam Newton to have Phillip Rivers come to town?
Yeah.
No. Are we going Eli Manning? Like, so no. What is out there for the Panthers? I think they may be stuck with him regardless of whether they really want to continue the relationship going
That's
forward.
That's a possible. Let me throw one curveball at you that unprepared for. Would you, if you're Carolina, and I'm not sure that they're going to let him go in Tampa, would you have an interest in Jameis Winston? And particularly, would you have an interest in, hey, we'll hire Byron Leftwich and Jameis. Would you have an interest
Byron the head coach? I take that part. But you bringing Jameis too?
So Jameis Winston.
Jameis is balling. I'm not going to say that.
Jameis
but
threw
I don't trust.
10 less interceptions. This season's an outlier, by the way. He has not thrown more than 18 in one season.
Yeah.
And he kept the 5,000 yards going at kind of the pace he's at right now.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an elite quarterback in the NFL. He's had to, obviously, do you trust him to remove 10 turnovers and not fumble as much? That's the problem.
Tampa's in the same spot, too. Tampa's going to have to continue down the line with Jameis Winston because they're not going to let him out because of the franchise tag. They can keep him there, and they can't find another quarterback. The Panthers and the Bucs have won too many games to be in the high end of the quarterback market, so it's going to be tough for them to get a young quarterback that can upgrade.
LeVar Arrington is back with us. Let's move to Cleveland, where the roller coaster season continues. Just last week, rumors were flying that Odell Beckham Jr. was already asking out of Cleveland after a disappointing year. But today, Odell was asked about his future and was singing a completely different tune.
It's done. It's old. You know, like, I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here. We're going to figure this thing out. It's just too special to leave.
You buying that?
That Odell's happy in Cleveland?
Yeah.
First of all, nobody's happy playing football. I keep telling y'all, it hurts. Like, that's the whole thing about football. But Odell's happy in this situation. I'll tell you why. He realized the power of his word. So when Odell came out last week and was, it sounded indecisive about his future, I think he was playing it straight down the middle because he realized how powerful his words were in New York that got him to Cleveland. Remember, he didn't choose to go to Cleveland. Cleveland made the trade for him. So now this is a guy who sees the negative fallout and then commits his words to his future actions. And what's happening coincidentally at the same time? Odell, season high in targets. Y'all watch the Arizona game? Season high in targets. Baker Mayfield force feeding it to Odell Beckham. You know why? Because they've come to that agreement. I need the attempts. I need the targets. This is something that he had as a luxury with Eli Manning, a franchise quarterback. I'll throw you 50-50 balls, Odell. Go get them. This is a luxury Dez Bryant had with Tony Romo that he didn't have with Dak Prescott, in part why he's at home. Because you won't throw me the 50-50 ball. So, yeah, I'm buying this. Him and Baker on the same page, give me the rock, even if you have to force feed it.
Even if we lose.
Well,
even if we get beat.
Well, they're going to lose if you don't give them the rock, for sure.
I'm not buying it, even though I have to buy it. And I'll say it's a no for me that he really wants to be in Cleveland. regardless of his targets this last game, his production has fallen off of a cliff. He went from a number one media market to a number 19 media market. And I think that that's the biggest piece of information here, is that he was able to build a brand that transcended the game of football and become a figure more recognizable than just a football player. I think he really, really looks at his football career being right along with his off the field career. And for that, I just don't think that Cleveland is a place that would be conducive for him to want to be, but he has to make it work. By leaving the number one market the way that he did and going to Cleveland, no matter where that next stop was going to be, I think somebody has told Odell Beckham, if you want your career to have any type of resurrection or finish that you'd like for it to have, you have to make it work where you currently are.
I think Odell is smart enough, or his agent is smart enough, to know, Odell, if you want to be traded, your value better be high. And your you need to have Cleveland be in position to trade you and get something in return. They're not going to get ripped off in a trade. And so, Odell, if you keep running your mouth that you want out of here and it's come get me, come get me, NFL teams around the league are going to be like, oh, he's trade bait. He wants out of there. He's decreasing his trade value. So you say, I'm committed, I'm happy here. That increases your trade value and increases the likelihood that you could get traded and get moved.
Yeah, and there's some Antonio Brown effect going on here.
Like, yeah.
Somebody had to get to him and say, look, man, you're messing with your money. By being indecisive or even giving out the impression that you are not happy where you are. These situations can work themselves out professionally in a private manner. I brought up Minkah Fitzpatrick yesterday. Like, you can't get traded without all the dust, with all of the smoke. So, Odell, play it smart, protect the brand, and go out there and ball out.
I just think NFL ownership, we talked about this earlier in the week, I thought, or maybe it was last week, I can't remember, but NFL ownership is like, hey, I think players and owners have had a conversation over the last 3 years because of the Kaepernick fallout, of people like, hey, man, we're making a lot of money. And we're paying you guys a lot of money. And that cap just keeps going up and up and up. We don't want to be paying guys this kind of money who aren't happy playing football, particularly the guys at the high end of the food chain like Odell Beckham Jr. We're paying you $14, $15, $16, $17, $18 million a year, and you're never happy? You wasn't happy in New York. Now you're not happy in Cleveland. It makes a team, do I really want to trade for Odell, invest that kind of money in him, and then get here and he's unhappy again? So Odell needs to smartly, applaud you, Odell.
Yes.
Put on the show, I'm happy in Cleveland. That's the right mentality, whether you stay there or they trade you. Embrace it and then see what happens. Get your attitude and mind right. It may help your performance and help the environment in Cleveland, or it may also get you to Los Angeles with the Rams or wherever the hell else you want to be.
That line is too damn long to play in the NFL. And I always, when people say, what's going to happen in player safety and participation rates are down, I'm like, the next man up. So Odell's starting to realize it.
Uncle Jimmy's here to talk about our approval rating for Tom Brady.
No.
Yeah.
But first, who's your big dummy of the day?
Him.
Hey, man. Big dummy of the day is the person that said, I don't like being in the limelight.
I don't.
You think you might be in the wrong business?
No, I don't.
Maybe you need to be a butcher, a baker.
A butcher?
A candlestick maker.
All right, let's talk some Tom Brady.
Who's a butcher?
Hell, be Uncle Jimmy. See how that feels.
Who is being openly questioned in New England these days.
Brady Bunch.
So maybe it's no surprise he also didn't get voted into the Pro Bowl for the first time in 10 years. Brady hasn't been named to the AFC squad. Marcellus.
Yeah.
You think this bothers Brady?
Hell yeah, that hurts. I mean, especially you've been there since 2008, and now this is the year where you don't get that invitation and all these challenges he has out there. I'm going to race you, Lamar, and I'm going to go break your record, Drew Brees. It ain't going to happen at the Pro Bowl.
You're going to miss Orlando?
Yeah, ain't going to be in Orlando. Well, it's not so much Orlando. It's just the fact that, man, y'all taking some respect off my name. That hurts.
Pro Bowls hadn't been any good since they moved it out of Hawaii.
You ain't lying there. You ain't lying.
Honolulu was awesome. All right.
Yes, it was.
Uncle Jimmy, you have some thoughts on Tom Brady? And, I see he's the problem in New England. Yeah, what?
No.
The person I feel sorry in this thing, Bill Belichick.
You feel sorry for Bill Belichick?
Yeah. Because Bill Belichick knew this day was coming.
Mm.
Bill's old school. You know, me and Bill was both raised on a farm. See, farmers know you always sell the cow before it starts to give powdered milk. See, it's kind of like when your girlfriend was the homecoming queen, but then you done married her, now she's the employee of the month at the neighborhood Dairy Queen. See, that's what Bill Belichick's getting upset about. He's tired of y'all asking all them dumbass questions at the press conference. You know, they be asking these dumbass questions like, Bill, what you think about Brady's quarterback play? Bill, he's old. What do you expect? Hey, Bill, what you say about Brady complaining about he ain't got no wide receivers? I didn't have cream in my coffee this morning. You don't see me crying. You know, Bill, what do you say about Brady complaining that he can't go deep? That's a problem between him and Gazelle. It has nothing to do with the Patriot organization. Which brings us to the press conference I want to see.
Yeah, what is it?
I can't wait till they ask Bill Belichick, hey, man, what are the plans for Tom Brady and the New England Patriots regarding the future? And I want Bill just to look at him and say, yeah, we're going to ride Tom Brady to the Super Bowl until he dies and we can't no more. We're going to ride Tom Brady to the Super Bowl unless he dies and we can't no more. Now, let me state some facts. Tom Brady's our quarterback. He's 42 years old, so there ain't no turning back. I saw this coming long ago when we had Garoppolo. But Bob wanted another Super Bowl, so now we ain't got nothing to show. See, let me tell y'all something. Can't nobody tell Bob nothing. Because he still think Tom's something. Yeah, we're gonna ride Tom Brady to the Super Bowl unless he dies and we can't go home. We're gonna ride Tom Brady to
the Super Bowl.
Dies and we can't no more.
I can't. What's the little dude? Who's the little rapper that does it? Little Nas X?
Yeah, Little Nas X.
Little Nas X. Little Jimmy X.
Yeah,
the
most we got successful here. Song ever. Yeah, like dude, broke every record.
That's some of your best work, Little Jimmy X.
That's not bad. That's right there. Yeah. Let's go.
All right, let me get to my approval rating.
Say it with your chest hair.
Yeah, for Tom Brady. He's going down. He's left. Yeah. Well, he left GOAT status a couple
that
of...
It happens when you get older, nephew.
It goes back.
A couple of ratings ago. A couple of approval ratings for y'all. Me. He's further down to a 74 all-star status. I dropped him 3 more points in job performance, all the way down to a season low and career low 9. 74 all-star.
They got pills for that, Brady. Come on, Brady. I'm going down. Look, I got the same with you, man. Basically, same category, but I had to drop his drive performance. Going out there, 120-some yards passing. Not Tom Brady.
No more.
All right, so the internet still has him at GOAT status. 38%.
Never. Teflon Tom,
baby. Second place with scout team, so
Teflon Tom.
A little divergent there. All right, Uncle Jimmy, nice job.
Come on, y'all sing with me.